Who's afraid of the dark? No one needs to put their hand up. Seems to be that many people are afraid of the dark. Children especially. And a little bit of the research that I did in the last week seems to be that children really only start to develop a fear from the dark close to the age of 2, and there really doesn't seem to be a huge fear up until that point. And the studies kind of go on to say that in adults and in children, it's not necessarily the dark itself that is what scares people or children, but it's what the mind does. The scenarios that the mind plays out that might happen in the darkness. And in a sense, in the mind, we have these role plays, and it sends terror or fear and anxiety flooding through our veins. So many people, whether they're children or older people, are afraid of the darkness because of what may happen to them in those dark spots. But for a child, there seems to be a way to cure a fear of the darkness. Put a little light on in the corner of the room. And when that little light on it, it sends enough illumination throughout the room that the child might just move back over and go to sleep. Because that little light in that pitch black room does enough to illumine the darkness that it gives them hope that everything is okay. And yet it seems to be a theme in the Bible. The people are afraid of the dark. See, the Bible tells us that in Genesis chapter 3, the darkness entered the world. That man no longer wanted to be a servant of God, that man wanted to be God, being like God, knowing good and evil. And from that moment on, darkness prevailed in the world. And in fact, it got so bad that one time the prophet Isaiah wrote these words. In Isaiah chapter 9, verse 2. For those who are walking in darkness have seen a great light. Those living in the land of the shadow of deepest darkness, a light has dawned. And for many hundreds of years, from Genesis 3 onwards, the people who were walking in darkness were longing for someone to come who would be a light that would illumine their dark world. That they feared about their future, they feared about what would happen to them. And then Isaiah told the people who this light would be. In Isaiah chapter 9 verse 6. For unto us a child will be born. For unto us a son will be given. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor. Everlasting Father. Mighty God. Prince of Peace. And then Isaiah went on to wax eloquently under the power of the Holy Spirit about his government will be without end. And we were focusing on that tonight at communion, about that time where we will be fully home with the Lord and we'll know we'll be home. And so as we dive into this story in Joseph tonight, it's not just Joseph that struggles with the darkness, but all mankind struggle with the darkness. It's the big theme of the Bible, darkness and light. But then someone came. John chapter 1 verse 5 says this. In him was life. And that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. And then Jesus himself spoke in John chapter 8 verse 11. Jesus spoke again to the people and he said, I am, ego in me, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness again, but will have the light of life. And so as we were to sense, take a helicopter view of the Bible tonight, from Genesis chapter 3 until the end of Revelation, darkness and light are struggling with each other. And Jesus came right in the center to penetrate the darkness. And we find Joseph tonight in the darkness. And that's our big theme this evening, God's light in the darkest of situations. If you've just come tonight for the first time, we're in our fourth part of this intriguing narrative. Joseph at the beginning in Genesis 37 got dreams from God. It's confirmed that he was going to be a great guy, he's going to be a top guy, everyone's going to bow down to him. And God gave him this amazing future. His father loved him so much he gave him a multicolored dream coat. His brothers hated him. Jealousy was ripping a family apart. The brothers hated him so much that he's thrown into a pit, but they actually want to make money out of him. And so he's on a caravan, in a sense, in a slave trader caravan on his way down to Egypt. We then find last week, or a couple of weeks ago, that in Egypt he was doing well in Potiphar's house. He rose up to be the top guy in Potiphar's house, but then Potiphar's wife falsely accused him, thrown into the prison. Then last week he's in the prison with the cupbearer and the chief baker, and he in sense and interprets dreams miraculously, but both of them forget him. And so we meet Joseph tonight languishing in the prison. And maybe that's how you feel this evening. You have a situation that feels so dark, it feels bleak. It feels like you're languishing in this sort of dungeon experience, and it seems like there's no way out. And we need to put a health warning at the start of this passage. There's a theological term called God's providence in the life of his people. And really, that's the story of Joseph. The word providence means that, in a sense, God can see into the future. He already knows what's going to happen. And so we kind of know the end of the story, although we'll not spoil it tonight. We'll sort of tease it out over the weeks. But God is going to rescue Joseph at the end of the story. And we as Christians can get into this sort of bow mentality where every story is wrapped up in a neat bow and God comes and saves the day in this world. But that is not also the story of the Bible. Listen to what the writer to the Hebrew talked about many people who lived by faith. He said this: some were put in prison and never escaped. Some were sawn in two. Some were destitute and persecuted. Some wandered in caves and lived in holes in the ground and gave up their lives and never received a miraculous rescue. Hebrews 11:36-38. Even more, in a sense, illuminating on this theme, Hebrews 11:13. All these people were still living by faith when they died, and they did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, and they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had an opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. You see, there are many people that have walked the Christian faith before us who didn't get their inheritance until heaven, that they didn't get their rescue story until heaven. And so while the story of Joseph intrigues us and delights us because God rescues him tonight from his dungeon experience, from his prison experience, we also must recognize that there are many that don't get that rescue until heaven. And Job struggled with it as well. Listen to what Job thought about the providence of God, struggling with the fact that God would know the future. Job in Job 23 verse 10 said this: but he, being God, knows the way that I take. But when he's tested me, I will come forth as gold. My feet have closely followed his steps. I have kept to his way without turning aside. I have not departed from the commands of his lips. I have treasured his words in my heart and in my mouth more than my daily bread. You see, Job wrestled with the providence of God in his life. God, why have you taken away all these things from me? God, why have you done this? God, if you could just explain yourself to me, if you would just reveal yourself to me, if you just show yourself to me, then I'd understand, God. Just come down and rend the heavens and make my path straight. And then there was a transition in Job's life. He said, but maybe God's doing something in the prison. Maybe God's doing something in my dungeon experience that he could never do with me in a palace-like experience. And I think that's what God does in Joseph's life. In this journey that we've walked with him now for 4 weeks, God has been refining Joseph in the fire. And listen to what happens to gold that's refined in the fire. It's an ancient process. Refining by fire is the preferable method for large quantities of gold. In ancient times, this form of refining involved a craftsman
sitting next to a hot fire with molten gold in a crucible, being stirred and skimmed to remove the impurities of dross that rose to the top of the molten metal. With flames reaching temperatures in excess of 1,000 degrees Celsius, this job was definitely a dangerous occupation for the gold refiner. Tradition remains largely untouched today, with the exception of a few advancements in safety and precision. So even with all the advancements of technology, if you want gold to be refined, it's got to go into 1,000 degrees of heat to come forth as gold. And Joseph is in this fiery furnace. He's in this dungeon-like experience, and he's being refined, and Job was refined, and many of the heroes of the faith were being refined in their experiences. Some were rescued on earth, all were rescued in heaven. And so we meet Joseph tonight in the dungeon. So let's go to Genesis chapter 41, verse 1. Genesis chapter 41, verse 1. And the first thing we see is God's light when life is perplexing. God's light when life is perplexing. When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile when out of the river there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat. And they grazed among the reeds, and after them 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the river bank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the sleek, fat cows. And then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy, full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up, but it had been a dream. In the morning his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Some of us dream more than others. I tend to dream sort of close to the beginning of the morning when I have to get up. Maybe it's because I'm hungry. I'm looking forward to Jenny's fry that she has for me every morning. I'm dreaming as I'm saying that. But this dream is a vivid dream. This isn't any sort of type of subconscious dream. You see, this is a dream that has come from God, and it seems real because it's going to be real. And so Pharaoh, I imagine, wakes up in a sweat. He probably wakes up in real angst about what is going to happen. It's been so vivid in his mind's eye or in his whatever way he was experiencing it. So Joseph knows nothing about what's happening in God's providence. Look at what it says in verse 1. When 2 full years had passed. How frustrating. Just last week he had interpreted the cupbearer's dream. Just last week he had interpreted the chief baker's dream. But in the story it's 2 years. You can imagine Joseph again going back to God. God, I've had it. The pit with my brothers, I thought I could sort of handle. Then being sold as a prisoner and a slave on the caravan down to Egypt, maybe I could handle. The false charges by Potiphar's wife was nearly at the end of my limit. Then I got thrown into this prison and you blessed me here and I was able to survive. But God, I cannot take this any longer. 2 years of languishing in this prison. Having rescued 2 people with dreams. God, where are you? And I think, reading in between the white spaces in the text, although it doesn't tell us, I think this was Joseph's lowest point. I think it's his lowest point, perhaps because he's a human, he's just like us. And he's had so many things back to back to back to back that I can imagine his faith is starting to wane, and maybe you can identify with that tonight. One thing after another in your life keeps piling up on top of it, and so it starts to test your faith with God. You say, God, why would you allow all these things to happen in my life? And so your life seems so perplexing this evening. But Joseph doesn't know that there's a dream going on up in the palace and not in the prison. Look at verse 8. The magicians come in. But they couldn't give a proper interpretation. They were skilled in dark magic and witchcraft. But this dream has come from one who is perfectly good and holy. So God is going to use a Hebrew slave to confound the wisdom of the world, and in particular, the wisdom of Egypt, just as he would do later with Daniel to interpret the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar. And the same would happen in Jesus' day. The Jewish people, when you read the Old Testament, were God's chosen and loved people. And even in this story with Joseph and his brothers, God is keeping the people of Israel alive just by the skin of their teeth. Just by a thread. God's keeping the family line of Christ alive through the people of Israel in the Old Testament. But even in the New Testament, in the Gospels, you see the people of Israel and the Jewish people in despondency. They're prisoners in their own land to the Romans and to the government. And many of them were despondent, and many of them were walking in darkness. And then Christ came into their perplexing situation. And some boy called Jesus, the son of a carpenter, walked into a synagogue one Sabbath and listened to what Dr. Luke records about him. In Luke chapter 4, verse 16, Jesus went to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, and it was his custom. And he stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. And rolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he's anointed me to preach good news to the poor." Listen to this. "He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then this is the bit I love the most. Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant and sat down. Would have loved to have been there. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began saying to them, "Today the scripture is being fulfilled in your hearing." And all spoke well of Jesus and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. "Isn't this Joseph's son?" they asked. And so here we see, in a sense, two parallel stories. Jesus rising up to lead people who are in imprisonment out of their captivity. Joseph, who's rising up from his imprisonment to lead prisoners and slaves out of their captivity. The world is going to go through a massive famine, and God is going to raise up Joseph to save the world. And in the life of Jesus, God is going to raise up his son to save the people from spiritual hunger and famine. Joseph moves in a perplexing situation, and so Jesus moves in our world, in our perplexing situations. But secondly, God's light of one man to solve the problem of the whole world. Look at verse 9. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I'm reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants. He imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now that it comes to my mind, a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was hanged." Now, I can empathize with the chief cupbearer. If Pharaoh was angry with you, Pharaoh in Egypt was regarded as a god, small g. And he, in a sense, had the chief baker beheaded, and you survived. I would say when I turned into work the next day with Pharaoh, the topic of being thrown in the prison wouldn't have been high on my general chit-chat for the day or any day. And so you can imagine that, in a sense, there was willful forgetfulness on behalf of the cupbearer. But I often wondered this in the last couple of days. What if the chief cupbearer had raised the issue before now? But that wasn't God's plan. You see, God had planned it that 2 years later, Pharaoh would have a dream and that there would be only one person in the whole world who would be able to interpret it. You see, God was working this situation together at exactly the right time for the people to be moved in exactly the right position. It's interesting, though, to think about Joseph. Pharaoh's got, you know, the screen is split in two. You have Pharaoh having his dreams in the palace and all this stuff's going on. But you have Joseph languishing in the prison. No idea what's going on over in the palace. Joseph waking up that morning just like any other day, languishing in the dungeon. Despondency, same old routine, same old boring stuff, same old no hope. But God was going to do something miraculous this day. You see, the Bible tells us in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived what God has prepared for those who love Him. All of us will receive the fulfillment of that promise in heaven. But for Joseph, he was going to receive some of that fulfillment on earth. Joseph doesn't realize that on this particular day, after 13 years of pure pain and perplexity and pressure, everywhere that he turned, God is going to raise Joseph up from the prison to the palace this day. And he's no idea about it. So, look what Pharaoh does, verse 14. So Pharaoh sends for Joseph. And he was quickly brought from the dungeon. Now just try to picture Joseph. What's going on in his mind? No activity for so many years. And then he's being quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that you hear a dream and you can interpret it. This is an amazing picture. Pharaoh is a god, and here is a Hebrew slave from the prison, now in the inner courts of the palace, in front of Pharaoh. Pharaoh could have Joseph beheaded at any moment, and Pharaoh was asking this young Hebrew boy to interpret his dream. How does he respond? Verse 16, look what he says. I can't do it. But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. And you can imagine Pharaoh computing that, but I'm the God. I'm the God of this part of the world. Who is this other God? I'm the God around here. But you see, Joseph has got such a deep, vibrant relationship with God that he's been clinging on to by his fingernails, I imagine, in the dungeon, that he still trusts God in the hardest and darkest of situations. And maybe God's calling you to do that tonight. To trust his heart, even when you can't see his hand of providence. To trust his heart, even when you cannot see his hand of providence. Joseph here is humble and fearless in the same sentence. I can't do it, but I know one who can. But look how Pharaoh responds, verse 17. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, in my dream I was standing on the bank of the Nile, and when out of the river there came up seven cows, fat and sleek, and they grazed among the reeds, and after them seven other cows came up, scrawny and very ugly and lean. I had never seen such ugly cows in all the land of Egypt. The lean, ugly cows ate up the seven fat cows that came up first, but even after they ate them, no one could tell that they had done so. They looked just as ugly as before. And then I woke up. In my dreams, I also saw seven heads of grain, full and good, growing on a single stalk, and after them, seven other heads sprouted, withered and thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the seven good heads. I told this to these magicians, but none of them can explain it to me. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream, Pharaoh. The seven lean, ugly cows that came up afterward are 7 years, and so are the seven worthless heads of grain scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because the famine that follows it will be so severe. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it. Wow. What courage for this young boy to do this in front of Pharaoh. You see, just like Joshua this morning, Joseph, I believe, feared the face of God more than he feared the face of any man. And so, in the palace, he had been cultivating a relationship with God in the prison. So when the palace moment came, he was ready. He had been refined for years and years in hardship and difficulty, that when the moment, in a sense of temptation, might have come where he would have disowned God or backed away from God. You see, God has done something in the prison and in the dungeon that when his moment came, he was ready to serve God wholeheartedly, no matter the consequences. But he goes on. This is amazing. He perhaps might have stopped there, but he goes on in his little sermon to Pharaoh. Verse 33. And now, let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. You see, Joseph didn't know about committees. If you're on a committee, never have an idea that you share with the committee because you're volunteering for the task by actually sharing that your idea. You ever notice that? So if you don't ever want to do anything in the committee, you just keep your mouth shut and you let everything happen. Joseph is about to talk himself into a job. And now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt so that the country may not be ruined for the famine. You can just imagine Pharaoh and the rest of the guys going, where did this guy come from? Who is this guy that has such wisdom? In a sense, I wonder if Joseph, in a sense, was shining in a way like no other person could. Because God had done more with him in the prison. That when his moment came in the palace, he knew God so well that it was just an overflow of his heart. C.H. Spurgeon, a quote that I've used before here, talks about this process. He said this, God doesn't save his children from the fire. Rather, he goes in there with them. God does not save his children from the fire. Rather, he goes in there with them. He then went on to say that fiery trials make golden Christians. And when Peter, as an older man, wrote to the churches scattered under persecution, talked about life's prisons and dungeons to them, he said in 1 Peter 1:6, in this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief and multicolored trials. These have come so that your faith of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by the fire, may be proved genuine and may result in praise and glory and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Though you've not seen him, you love him. And though you don't see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy. Was it just Peter? No, James, the half-brother of Jesus, said this. Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised for those who love him. You see, God did more with Joseph in the prison than he could do with him in the palace. And God was raising up one man to save the whole world. But isn't that our story this evening? Hasn't there been a greater deliverance than Joseph saving the world in famine? You see, Galatians chapter 4 verse 4 says this. But when the time had fully come, or at exactly the right time, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law. And here's his purpose: to redeem those under the law, that we might receive the full rights as sons. Because you're sons, God sends his Spirit of his Son into our heart, that we might call out, Abba, Father. And he tells us why he did it in John 3, verse 16. For God so loved you that he gave his one and only Son, that whosoever should believe in him wouldn't perish, but would have eternal life. You see, God raised up Joseph to save the world from famine, but God has raised up his one and only Son, Jesus Christ, to save the world from spiritual famine. And not only that, to give us hope in the darkness. You see, the writer to the Hebrew wrote to the Hebrew people and said, consider him. Consider Jesus. So that you will not grow weary or tired. Look up to Jesus. The things that he suffered and his prison experience when he was in the courtyards and suffering before Pontius Pilate and whipped and beaten and scourged and being broken in spirit in the Garden of Gethsemane, when his life was perplexing, when it seemed like there was no way out, Jesus was doing it for you. And he says to us, consider him this evening. But finally, God's light in the exaltation of his servants at the perfect time. Verse 37, the plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are said to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne am I greater than you. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole of the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took a signet ring from his finger, put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen, put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as the second in command, and men shouted before him, make way. Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. During the 7 years of abundance, the land produced plentifully. Joseph collected all the food produced in those 7 years of abundance and stored in the cities. In each city, he put the food in grown in the fields surrounding it. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, it is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. The second son he named Ephraim and said, it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. The 7 years of abundance of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began. Just as Joseph has said, there was famine in all the other lands, but in the whole land of Egypt there was food. When all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to Pharaoh for food. And then Pharaoh told the Egyptians, go to Joseph and do what he tells you to do. When the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt, and all the countries came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was so severe. You see, God raised up his servant at exactly the right time to save the world from hunger. But God has also sent his son Jesus and exalted him at exactly the right time. Isn't that the lovely passage in Philippians chapter 2, verse 9? Therefore God has exalted him and given him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow, in heaven and on earth and even under the earth, and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. See, we have great hope because of what Jesus has done for us tonight. And you say, how should I wait on him?
this last slide tells us how we should wait. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he might lift you up at the proper time or in due time, casting all your anxiety on in him. Why? Because he not only cares for Joseph, he not only cares for Jesus, Joseph the carpenter's son, but he cares for you.